The Volume.
Yo, what's happening? What's up, everybody? Welcome into a brand new episode of Snaps, youtube.com/@volumesnaps, a channel that probably, but this time next week, we'll have a different name. As if you missed it on Friday, this will be our final week here on The Volume. Nothing but love, as we said on Friday. Again, in case you missed it, it changed my life significantly. I have loved it here. But you know what I love even more? I love this show. Okay. Yeah. And so I don't want this show to go anywhere. And so we gonna keep doing it, man. So now, though, guys, it is more important than ever that we get your help in the three ways that you can help us. Okay. We're not, I mean, maybe one day we'll see, do we end up doing a Patreon, something like that? It depends, right? If somebody picks up the show or not, we'll see, whatever. But right now, one thing you do, hit the like button, share it with your friends. If you listen on pod, rate and review. Okay. That's it. Sorry. And I don't mean significantly changing the names. I just mean like, it will still be Snaps. It'll probably just be Snaps CFB, honestly. You know, something nice and simple. I'm T-Bob Hebert. He is there. Murray. Aaron, what's up, man? How's your weekend? All good?
Weekend was great. I actually did watch 5 minutes of the ladies basketball game yesterday, which was the most I've watched the entire tournament for both, which was fun. But let's not beat around the bush here, T.
Yo.
T-Bob just informed me.
Oh, God.
That he will be pushing back his haircut another month.
No. Another two weeks. Everybody relax. So I have the wedding that I couldn't cut it for. Now I have to go to Chicago for a week at the beginning of May for a week worth of television for Stadium, which is a show that I do with AJ McCarron. You know, Aaron, who I may have to leave you for because he's still in the XFL. And he's pretty fucking good. And the Battle Hawks are out here winning games and shit. But I apologize. I am going to have to push a couple weeks back. And I know that it's just going to lead to more doubt. But just know, I've got you one day. I'm coming, guys. Don't worry. I swear it's going to happen.
So I think the further you keep pushing this on, there needs to be some sort of penalty. There needs to be some sort of fee to the bullshit of you extending this. This should have been done months ago, to be honest. So now T-Bob has to do the fuckboy fade, and he needs to get the mustache.
I'm liking your mustache today. When did that come about?
I've been messing around with it for about a week now. I'm kind of digging it a little bit.
You kind of liking it? You look kind of like, it's giving me a little bit of daddy.
I got the Georgia spring game on Saturday. Should I rock the stash for the spring game?
Can we
do a poll?
Are you going to continue to grow it out? Are you going to continue to thicken it up a little bit? Yeah, right now, so PG says Super Troopers, right now you're at like a Farva level of length with the stash, I would say. I'm getting like a sexy Farva vibe from you. Or he'll always be Landfill in my heart, but Farva as well.
I did the full complete shave last Monday. And I said, I'm not going to touch the mustache. And
hell yeah.
What it looks like. So.
Hell yeah. Well, I like it. I actually think it looks really good. It looks pretty sexy. Yeah. I don't think I would. I don't think I want to cut my face. I don't want to see my double chin again. You know, like it's just got these big old cheeks and everything. I just need to trim all this up, though, to be clear. Yes, Aaron should continue to grow out the power stash. All right, guys, hit the like button. Share the show. Today's show, we're going to talk some spring ball for a lot of major teams. Little UGA, little Ohio State, kind of a one big thing sort of setup. LSU, Alabama, Texas. We're getting into the Kalen DeBoer article that dropped on The Athletic and just how different he is than Nick Saban. I know that this is a football show, but given that in this pseudo-independent time, we maybe have a little more power over, or not power, excuse me, because again, Volume never told us what to talk about, but like, whatever. Like, I kind of want to talk a little bit about John Calipari. Because in some ways, this is a college sports show, and that's one of the more shocking moves that I can remember in recent memory. And then we'll do our Super League wish list. Pick one thing that you think would be great in a CFB Super League, which if I had to guess, we probably have the same thing. But we'll see as the show goes on. All right. Let's dive in to spring ball. Imagine this, Aaron. Spring football is going on, and I've been reading a lot of articles. It seems like things are going pretty good across the country. Everybody's feeling real positive about the coaching changes. Quarterbacks look crisp. There's lively competition going on at multiple position groups. Mm-hmm. Some things remain a work in progress. We are improving every single day. I want to start here.
What's about? Good thing we have a 12-team playoff for all these teams that are looking so good right now.
Exactly. According to spring reports, there are going to be so many championship viable teams that this is the perfect year for it to happen. You call these games at time. You sit down with the coaches and kind of get a little bit more behind the scenes than we do. When you go to call one of these games, what are you looking for in terms of like, okay, I can actually draw some value out of this and carry it forward into the season?
For me, I would say, you know, how much of the roster is really set when it comes to like starters. Like, I want to know walking out of the meeting, you know, coach may not say this publicly, but a lot of times he will let us know a little bit too in the meetings of like, okay, we're set here. We feel good here. And then now too, which is interesting because we always do, you know, and I fall victim to this myself. I am always of the, you know, poor coaches. They got to deal with this and they got to deal with the portal. And they got to deal with money. Well, the great thing about being a coach in today's game, you can go essentially bring in new guys after spring. You can assess like, hey, LSU, we don't have enough fucking defense alignment. So guess what? We're going to hit the portal and we're going to get four or five guys after spring ball because we need depth at that position. So understanding, and I remember this was at Arkansas last year, sitting down with Sam Pittman, and obviously did not work really well what they did post spring. But you know, he was like, we don't have depth here. We don't have depth here. We don't have depth here. So it's interesting to follow over the next coming weeks how they hit the portal to try and fill those needs. So that's something you take away out of it. Who do you have? Who do you feel comfortable with? Who are you now going to try and get in the portal when that reopens here in a few weeks? So those are some of the big takeaways. But big position groups. What's your quarterback look like? What's the offensive line look like? What's the defense line look like?
Yeah, and let's be clear, we're kind of couching this as like a one big thing. But for a lot of these schools, I almost want to like start at the quarterback position and then get into another big thing. Because unless you're like Georgia, I would say quarterback's actually not that interesting. Texas, obviously not. But like Alabama, LSU, Ohio State, it is the first thing. It's where it starts. Well, let's start with your UGA Bulldogs. And for me, Aaron, outside looking in, without nearly as much kind of info on the program and how spring is going, to me, it's all about the weapons with Georgia. Like, I know the defense is going to be awesome. I know the O-line will be great. But even last year, I think that was the single biggest weakness on this Georgia team. Mm-hmm. And one of the only times I've ever actually gotten pissed off on this show was when we had Peter Burns on. And he told me to be quiet on our own show as you and him were still trying to gaslight me into Ra-Ra Thomas and Dominic Lovett being
everything we're hearing, Dom Lovett has taken that next step this spring.
Oh, great. That's great.
All the positive talk from obviously Kirby and the staff about what the roster looks like. But no, listen.
Hold on, though, because that happened in the middle of the season. Yeah. And so let's look at where these stats ended up, okay? Uh-oh. Brock Bowers, who was easily the most dynamic weapon and would have had a great season had he played the whole time. He would have been a 1,000-yard guy. He ends up at 56, 714, 6 TDs. He leads the team in every one of those categories despite playing just 10 games. And yet you're going to tell me 10
games is not a lot of games. That's a lot.
No, exactly. So you're going to. So that's why I was talking about a lack of weapons and getting shouted down because y'all beat the fuck out of Kentucky. And that was my entire point. Dominic Lovett was not that exciting. 54 catches for 613, four tuds. I fall asleep on that shit. LSU's three receiver, Kyron Lacy, did more than that. Marcus Rosemead, Jack Saint. 13 for 34, 500
They also
yards.
They need to throw the ball because they're in shootouts the entire time.
Ladd McConkey, 30 for 478. Ra-Ra Thomas, 23 for 3. I'm just saying, man, none of these, like, if Georgia, to your point, it is relative improvement. They're so strong everywhere else. It doesn't mean as much to them as other teams. But if there is an area to improve, it is without a doubt how dynamic and threatening the weapons will be.
100%. And I thought last year was finally going to be the year. I said the entire offseason, I said beginning of the season, this was the year. You have a quarterback that you can trust to throw the ball down the field. You have dynamic receivers. You have the best playmaker in America back. You went into the portal and got Missouri's top receiver, who's an all-SEC guy. Like, this should be Georgia's best year throwing the football. And because of injuries, maybe some new guys and new positions, it just did not turn out to be like that. So they need to get better there. Like, there's two question marks for me. I think quarterback, obviously, you know how I feel about Carson. I think Carson has the potential to be the number one.
Yeah, Carson's fantastic. Yeah.
Offensive line, from everything I'm hearing, and even talking to my boy Benj Jones, the offensive line may be the best offensive line Georgia's had since Kirby's been
there,
which is scary as hell. I think tight ends are going to be fine with Oscar. The two big questions, one on offense is receivers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you went to the portal, you got the boy from Vandy, but like Ra-Ra and Dom have to take their game up to another level. And then defense, it's the DBs. You're going to lose three guys that get drafted in the top three rounds of the NFL draft. And I know that's Kirby's baby. I know they've recruited really well that position, but really it's a skill on both sides. Receivers, DBs, big question marks for me for Jordan. Not even like big question marks, but like those the areas I would
relative
say
question marks.
Yeah,
again, relative question marks. They're the number one team in the country, but yeah, like these are their relative weaknesses. Mm-hmm. Captain Spartan 04, the $5 super chat. Even though this is a college football show, I just want to hear y'all make fun of Kentucky and Coach Cal leaving them for Arkansas. Sincerely, an excited Louisville fan. Don't worry, Spartan, that's coming, because I think it is deeply funny that Kentucky really wanted to break up with Cal, couldn't quite pull the trigger. And then he said, oh, you wanted to break up with me? Well, sorry, bitch. I got a new boo and she got me a fat ring and I'm out of this thing. So we will get there a bit later on. Yeah. Okay. So we're kind of on the same page then. It's the skill positions for this Georgia team that we want to see where they're at coming out of spring and going into this next portal window. Ohio State, for me here again, how does it not start with quarterback?
Is it quarterback? Or is it the offense looks like with Chip?
Well, it's not that. I guess one is an extension of the other in many ways. Because, I mean, look, Will Howard's going to be the guy, right? So it's not a question of who is going to be the guy. It's how good will Will Howard be? Because if Will Howard's really good, well, all of a sudden, they're the unquestioned number one contender to take on Georgia. However,
I would say they're maybe the best team in America if Will Howard's legit.
I don't know if I can quite go there, but yeah, but whatever. It's a conversation for sure, right? Like, there's a debate to be had. But think about the amount of pressure on Will Howard. If he's not the guy, then all that $13 million in NIL roster money and everything else that's been bandied about in all of these headlines in the offseason, all of that is for naught if he can't shoulder all that burden of the Buckeye fan base and all the pressure that comes along with it and bring them back to a Big Ten championship and then navigate a 12-team playoff.
No, I want to see what Chip Kelly's offense looks like, because you know he's inheriting an offense and personnel that's not really truly his personnel. But listen, when you have two of the best running backs, the best running back tandem in America, that does fit what Chip wants to do. Can he mold Will Howard into the type of quarterback that he's used to working with is going to be the question. So, yes, it goes hand in hand. You've been given this quarterback. Can you turn him into something that fits what you're doing schematically with the great running backs you have? So all eyes will be on Will. I think a lot of eyes will be on the offensive line. They're going to be a great receiver. They're going to be, once again, the best running back tandem in America. I think Howard has potential being on a better team with some better coaching, especially when it comes to quarterbacking, to take his game to another level. But how good's the offensive line? But when it comes to complete football team, we're talking about maybe the best defense in America. When's the last time you talked about Ohio State being potentially heading into the season the best defense in America, definitely top five defense. So this offense doesn't have to be 45 points per game. I think this offense, not saying like you want to take a step back, which I don't think it could take a step from where it was last year. I think it will be better, but this doesn't need to be Will Howard go through 40 touchdowns or we can't win football games. This is a different Ohio State now. And you should be excited for an Ohio State fan knowing Michigan's going to be down. It's a pretty damn clear path to the playoffs, winning your conference and being a top two or three team.
I think that, and that's why outside of quarterback and Chip Kelly, which again, how does Chip Kelly look? That's a great point. I actually had not considered that in my notes. But outside of that, I just want to see Caleb Downs in a Buckeye uniform. I mean, he is the superstar. He is the big free agent signing of the offseason. And again, it comes in the context of a defense that may be the best in the country. And that represents the single greatest difference between this Ohio State team and any other Ohio State team in the Ryan Day era.
The more I think about, I saw this the other day because they posted Caleb Downs. I think it was like preseason first team All-American. I don't know what outlet put this out. Caleb Downs first team, Malachi Starts second team. And I was like, damn, just like if he did go to Georgia, what that dynamic. I mean, you're talking about two guys, top 10, top 15 pick in their respective drafts, the best safety in their respective classes, paired up together. And I know there's still a bunch of, you know, salty Georgia fans that they weren't unable to make that deal happen. But you said it to you, like, Ohio State spent $13 million for this roster.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like the New York Yankees of college football this year. They got superstars. They got the coaching staff. Can it all come together to win a national championship?
And then look, if you're talking about Ohio State, I think it's impossible not to buy in to the Jeremiah Smith hype train. This was one of the highest rated recruits we've ever seen. Ohio State ends up, avoiding getting him poached. He lands in Columbus, and I didn't know. Did you know about this black helmet stripe tradition before Jeremiah Smith? Mm-mm. So this is pretty cool. This was started by Urban Meyer, and I think it's pretty smart. I'm a big fan of psychological motivation. Mm-hmm. When we used to do our fourth quarter program under Tommy Moffitt, you would start with a gray shirt. Everybody would. And if you had a perfect day, you would earn a white shirt. You had to earn X amount of white shirts to pass the program. But what it became was, if you showed up and everybody else in your position group's in white, or maybe you're the only one in white, either way, it's a very clear indicator of like, oh, wow, this guy has arisen. He has stepped up. Well, Ohio State, when you're a new player there, you get a black stripe placed down the center of your helmet. And I'm going to read a quote here, explain it. Quote, "The stripe serves both as a motivator and a challenge. It acts as a daily reminder that the player has not yet proven himself to the coaches, the team, and the Buckeye community. Removing the stripe is not merely a formality. It is earned through hard work, understanding the playbook, showing respect for teammates and coaches, and displaying the skills and attitudes befitting an Ohio State football player." Jeremiah Smith set a record for getting that black helmet stripe removed. And nobody has ever... And this is a cat who should be a senior in high school right now. He should be getting ready for prom. Nobody has ever had their black stripe removed this quickly. And if you've seen any of the practice videos, he has been dominant. Mm-hmm. So if you're talking about Will Howard and him needing to make an impact, I mean, so much pressure on his shoulders. I mean, you can speak to this, Aaron. What is having a guy like Jeremiah Smith do in terms of alleviating some of that pressure?
Well, he's going to get one-on-ones. There's no doubt about it. When you have those two running backs in the backfield and you're going to be in an offense that is run by Chip Kelly, it's going to be run first. And for Will Howard to know that, hey, teams are going to put 8 men in the box, I'm going to get single coverage, and now I can trust this young kid to go out there and win one-on-one battles. And it's not just him. I mean, they have plenty of 4- and 5-star guys at the receiving position. I mean, they are true contenders of the wide receiver name. This offense, if the offensive line takes care of business, Will Howard is going to be put into incredible opportunities to throw the ball vertically down the field. Mm-hmm. It is. I mean, it's going to be set up perfectly for him. It's can he take advantage of the situation that he's going to put himself in right now?
And look, I do some work with Jake Butt for Stadium, Red Corner, Blue Corner, to show that him and Joshua Perry do. And I fill in every now and then. And it's interesting to see the Michigan perspective on this, because they're still feeling cocky, Aaron. After three years of beating that ass in a row, they feel like they have a psychological advantage over the Buckeyes. And I'm kind of guilty of just looking on paper and being like, sure, you can have all the psychological advantages in the world, but what if they're just flat out better than you? And I feel like Ohio State is flat out better than Michigan right now, but maybe the spring games will give us some insight as to the truth of that debate. Next on the list, we got LSU. And again, replacing a Heisman Trophy winner.
Can they play a full game? Can they actually play a game?
Who?
LSU.
Like roster-wise?
Yeah, or is it going to be 7-on-7? Like, do they have enough defensive linemen to play a spring game.
I don't know if they have enough. I think they have just enough bodies to put together a two or three deep on the interior defensive line. The edges, they're fine. But yeah, no, there. I mean, for context, there's a cat, Kimo Macaniole, who just switched from O-line to D-line a month ago, mm-hmm. and he's taking reps with the ones. So that kind of tells you the dire straits that LSU is in.
How can you mess up that position so bad?
Because they fucking hated Matt House. And Mason Smith went to the league early despite having bad tape. And Makai Wingo, an All-American, went to the league early
despite having bad tape. You more depth than that. Like, there's, you have to know in this league, you have to win in the trenches. You have to recruit depth at O-line, and you have to recruit depth at D-line.
Yeah.
You can't just tell me just because a few guys went to the NFL that all of a sudden you don't have anyone left on that roster.
Well, okay, so your point is valid in terms of the depth, but if you had those two guys, you would still actually feel pretty good about, you'd feel really good about your ones, and you'd feel pretty good about Guillory being your lead guy out of the twos. Right now, you're relying on this guy, Jacoby and Guillory, to be your one, and he's done well, reportedly, spring ball and all that. But I would say for LSU, it does start with the defense. I mean, look at the moves. Yeah. You hire Blake Baker for $2.5 million, Bo Davis for $1.5 million. You pay Peoples to coach your edge for about $800K. I think Corey Raymond's getting around $1 million. That's not even getting into the contracts that you bought out. I mean, rough napkin math says you probably did $10 million worth of investment in the offseason and flipping this defensive staff. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, how dynamic does that group look going against a dominant O-line and an offense that should remain very good? So, and I would say that if we're looking at the defense, to me, you got to focus on Harold Perkins. Yeah. I mean, he was a guy that we thought was maybe the best defender in the country going to last season. And although his stats would be good for a regular player, under the context of that expectation, he just disappeared. And he was threatless and feckless. Mm-hmm. He was a bit like that UGA receiving core. And so I want to see, can they, I want to see if Blake Baker can get Harold Perkins back to being that dominant playmaker where he's going to affect games every single week. Yep. And you're going to have to game plan him every single week.
It is season two for him being in the inside though. So that, well, no, that's no, but
remember though, he only played Florida State on the inside last year. And then after an entire offseason of playing on the inside, they were like, nah, fuck it. We're going to make him a nickel, Sam. Just a nickel linebacker, just out of nowhere. They're like, we're going to move back out there. So it was a disaster in that regard last year.
He's heading into the season, though. This isn't like brand new to him.
Fair.
Not completely brand new.
I also like to hear the new DC, Blake Baker, talk about manufacturing matchups. Because this is something that we generally think of as an offensive side of the ball only deal where, let's get our receiver on like a linebacker, right? Or a tight end on a safety. Mm-hmm. But hearing Baker talk about, no, we want to manufacture matchups in the same way for our guys. It sounds very obvious, but it's an angle that I'm
interested in how you do that.
What?
Well, that's what I'm saying. How you do that.
Oh, yeah, exactly, right? That's what I'm saying.
Use the offense, dictate defense has to react a little bit.
But like, what if you know that there's an O-lineman that doesn't deal well with interior pressure or something like that? We can throw in a lot more of Harold Perkins attacking that guy. We're going to play him on the edge a ton because we think we have a real advantage there. So I'm just interested to see in how they do that.
Yeah, I'm the victim of like, I think matchups, I look straight to the outside. But no, you're 100% correct. Like, how do you move linebackers and guys with speed against maybe offensive linemen that are a little bit slower off the ball, things like that. So yeah, more of defense can create matchups inside the box, I would say. Offense, more matchups on the
perimeter. Fair. Absolutely. And then and then for LSU, it's just Garrett Nussmeier, man. Because not only are you replacing a Heisman winner, but you're replacing one who statistically was more overwhelming than almost anybody we've ever seen, and stylistically did it with his legs as much as with his arms. And Nussmeier does not have the legs. And LSU does not have a great running back room right now. And so how you make up for that aspect.
Are you a fan heading into the season? Year three.
I got to be honest.
You always say like year three, is the big year for coaching stats. And Brian Kelly is, I would say exceeded expectations for the first two seasons. Win the West, produce a Heisman winning trophy quarterback year two. have a good season. It feels like year three is going to be a little bit of a pullback.
Well, it's where, and it's interesting because that's against what Brian Kelly was saying, even going into last season, where he was almost pumping the brakes on the year two hype and saying like, well, year three is where we're really expecting the breakthrough. And so it just, but again, to your point, objectively, I look at this team and I see question marks at every single level except for the offensive line. Now, I feel okay about the answers with a lot of these question marks, but no, I got LSU right outside the playoff. I got LSU right outside.
I think that's because of their schedule. I mean, let's be honest here. It's not because of the team.
Well,
I think a lot has to do with the schedule.
I think their schedule's actually sneaky friendly.
I'm saying you're putting them just on the fringe of playoffs because the schedule less to do with the roster.
Yeah, you're saying because the schedule is friendly, not because it's super hard. Yeah, yeah. I would agree. I would agree with you there. Next, on the list.
Which team's better? This past year's LSU or this year's LSU? And that was a 9-3 football team.
I mean, the only reason why I would hope that the answer would be this year is because last year's defense was an abject disaster. And so, like, it shouldn't be such an Achilles heel. Like, yes, your offense should take a step back, but you should not have a defense that halfway through the season is dead last in the Power Five in terms of what's the stat? What do we call it? Scoring rate or whatever? It's like where the percentage of drives that ends in points for the other team, it was like over 50%, which is pathetic. So that should mean that they should be better. Next on the list,
the chat real quick before the next one. Bilbo, I will not be going to the Masters, sadly. I was supposed to go on Friday, but then I got put on the Georgia Spring game, so I'll be in meetings Friday.
Missing the Masters for the Georgia Spring game sounds like the seventh circle of hell. God, that sounds awful. Are you okay? No. Have you mentally recovered from this?
No.
Damn, dude. I'm sorry.
You did have a super chat about your mustache, though, too, from Nick.
Oh, yeah. Where'd it go? Here we go. Nick, $5 super chat. T-Bob adding the handlebar mustache with the fuckboy fade would really get me going.
Yeah. You
need some new fat pics, so I can't wait for that fade, baby. Hell yeah, dude. If you're jerking off the snap, send me pictures. Send me a cum tribute, and we'll send you merch.
We have to make our own merch now.
But yeah, look, LSU's got a lot of question marks, certainly. Yep. And so spring's always interesting in trying to answer some of those. One name to watch out for, I do think Kyren Lacy is going to be the next huge LSU receiver. He looks like he has really kind of asserted himself in that regard.
Nussmeier gives me more confident Carson Beck vibes.
Yeah, I could. Yes, you've been in the system, didn't transfer.
Played a lot more.
And Nussmeier's always had that fuck you gunslinger attitude, right? And you saw it in the bowl game. Again, I don't care about Nuss's stats as much in the bowl game as I did him staring down 14 point deficits, 94 yards to go to win the game, and finding a way to get it done. Next on the list, the Alabama Crimson Tide. And again, I start here with quarterback. And you may say, why? You're returning Jalen Milroe. But the conversation around quarterback in Alabama and Tuscaloosa circles has been pretty fascinating to me in that they remain unsold on Jalen Milroe. I'm not talking about the coaches. I'm talking about more of the fan base in general. And you see guys saying like, oh, we'd love for, oh my God, why am I blanking on his name? To take a step forward. Who's their other quarterback?
Oh, white boy. God, where am I drawing a blank to?
Ty Simpson. Thank you. Ooh, geez. Great college football show. So I want to see Jalen Milroe, though. Does Jalen Milroe look like the clear starter? And with a new staff where the slate is essentially wiped clean and everybody is starting fresh and you get to make your first impressions and there's always a lot of depth chart movement when you get a new staff. Does Jalen Milroe come out and look like he could fulfill the potential that you saw last year. Because again, I get there were very clear areas in which Jalen Milroe can improve, mainly that short to intermediate passing game. But he was already dominant at pushing the ball down the field. We all know he's a physical freak, essentially unparalleled by any quarterback in the entire country. And so if you want to go full sunshine pumping on Alabama, it becomes pretty fucking terrifying thinking if Kalen DeBoer can unlock the full ceiling on Jalen Milroe. Like, what does that ceiling look like? Is it Jaden Daniels-esque? Is it Heisman-esque? I'm not sure, but it's not outside the realm of possibility.
You know what I'm excited to see? I'm excited to see this for Alabama for their spring game. With everyone leaving, with Saban leaving, with all the five stars and Caleb Downs going to Ohio State and this guy leaving and this guy declaring for the NFL draft, when Alabama goes onto the football field and 80% of that roster is still a bunch of four and five star guys and they're just bigger, stronger, and faster, and it looks just like Alabama. Like, I think there's a lot of people expecting Alabama to walk onto the football field this weekend or next football season, and the talent is going to be so depleted. The talent has been stockpiled so well,
yeah,
and the recruiting has been so damn good, even this past cycle, that they're still top, what, three? When we looked at it a few weeks ago, top three talent roster in America is still in Tuscaloosa.
Well, and
that is a loaded roster. So when you look at those guys on field, they're going to be like, okay, that it's still going to look like Alabama.
Well, it's and CJ says Milroe will have a good year. He got better offensive coaching for sure. I mean, think about that. You're going from Tommy Reese to Kalen DeBoer.
Yeah.
Like, that's a massive upgrade offensively. Would you have loved in a perfect world to have Ryan Grubb still there as well? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But again, going from going from Reese to DeBoer, the experience there, it's not even close. No. It's a vast, vast gulf. Other things I'm looking for Alabama, how does that secondary look?
Yeah,
I mean, you're losing Caleb Downs, Terrion Arnold, and Kool-Aid McKinstry. All Americans, one and all, in one single offseason. Mm-hmm. And again, we know they have depth and that it's the classic, they reload, they don't replace. But can that secondary, because that's really what drove them, in my opinion, to that national championship, was the defense and specifically that secondary. And that was why Georgia lost. Like earlier in the show, somebody said, motivated, dedicated, said, Delp is solid. UGA is going to average 39 points a game again. Yes, UGA will average damn near 40 points, right? But what happens when they go up against the great defenses, a la what happened against Alabama last year? Are their playmakers dynamic enough? So from the Alabama perspective, are our defenders dominant enough where you can win a game like that because the other team just can't generate anything against you?
Well, I mean, does Alabama have playmakers too? I mean, when's the last time we've talked about Alabama having elite receivers? It's been 4 years now. I mean, it's been a minute.
They were challenging for wide receiver U there for a second, obviously culminating in 2020.
Yeah, was it 2020 was the last big year of receivers with Devontae? I mean, since then, it's been, 2021, they had Jameson. You know, it's been really the past two seasons where you've seen a pretty significant drop-off from production on the outside for Alabama and their receivers. You lost probably your best receiver to the NFL draft. You lost another one to the portal to Texas. Like we talk about so much the quarterback spot. And Jalen has to get better as a thrower. There's no doubt about that. 5 to 25 yard window. Like he has to be more confident throwing the football. They need to do what they did. You brought up a good point with Jaden Daniels. They need to put him on that kind of mental, strategy heading into every single practice. But the receivers have to be better. Receivers have to be better. And I just don't know if they are, because it's not like they went to the portal and got a bunch of superstars to make up for it. But it could be schematics too. You do bring in a better offensive mind, a guy that has shown that you could put receivers in positions to go out there and make plays. So Jalen has to be better. Receivers have to be better.
Royal Payne says the only questions on Bama's teams are DBs and tackle, offensive tackle. Proctor may come back, and they like how the young DBs look. Look, I'm sure the young DBs are some dogs. I'm just saying you replace improving guys. And I think you're fine at tackle because Proctor is coming back, right? Mm-hmm. And like he got really good by the end of last year. And so he's going to continue to be good. Dutchman, y'all only including LSU because of T-Bob? I mean, I mean, actually, yeah. That's actually not untrue if you look at the rest of this list, because everybody else kind of feels like viable national championship candidates. Like maybe an Oregon actually would have been a better inclusion.
But LSU is a fringe playoff team. Like, let's be honest. Like they're right there. They're a team that I don't think a lot of people would be surprised if they're in there at 11 or 12. And I wouldn't be surprised if they're somewhere between 16 and 20. Like they are a top, I would say 10 to 20 team. So between T-Bob and that, yes, they deserve some love.
John Doman with a pretty good, John Glasgow with a pretty good name too here. If we're going to mention Jeremiah Smith, Alabama landing Ryan Williams was massive. Can he have a big impact? I mean, that's a two-time Alabama Mr. Football. Looked like Auburn was maybe going to steal him. That was kind of Kalen DeBoer's first big win on the recruiting trail, was holding it down in the Ryan Williams recruitment. So maybe he answers some of that weapon question. And then we arrive at the Texas Longhorns. And to me, again, I go back to weapons. No A.D. Mitchell, no Xavier Worthy, no Jonathan Brooks. I feel really good about Quinn Ewers. I mean, him and Carson Beck are definitely two of the top five quarterbacks that you probably feel good about in the entire country. And so can you replace those guys? And then look, I think losing Byron Murphy and Tavondre Sweat on the inside is also quite a lot to overcome for the Longhorns, as they're going to be expected to come into the SEC and immediately push for an SEC championship and make the playoff.
No, to me, it goes straight to defensive line. I mean, why are we so confident? Why was I at least so confident in Texas last year? They had a veteran offensive line that, you know, was, I would say, good, not great at times. But they had a dominant defensive line. Like, they looked and felt like Sark built this team like an SEC team from the inside out. And then you get some really good skill guys on the outside with a talented quarterback. But if you can win in the inside, you're going to have a chance to be successful every single week, not just on and off, but every single week. And then, you know, you lose those guys on the inside on defense. You lose the guys on the outside receivers. So I think there's some big questions, but just like I'm a believer in Carson, I'm a believer in Quinn. Like, I know, call me crazy, but like, I like Quinn. I think Quinn's a top three, top four quarterback in the NFL draft. That's a first round talent quarterback right there. Third season in the system. You know, they went out to the portal and they got some receivers in that position. I think they'll be fine. I think they're more than ready to be a top five team heading into the season.
And again, I mean, this will not be answered in spring, but there is still a bit of a question with Sark. Until he does it 2 years in a row, there is a bit of a question.
Then you're going to say it's 3 years in a row after that.
No, that's not.
You don't.
I've fallen on my Sark sword. I have said I was wrong plenty of times. Is that unfair? I mean, the one good year remains the exception, not the rule. Now, I like the momentum he's built. Recruiting's kick ass. So in theory, he should come out and immediately compete for an SEC championship and immediately be in the playoffs. But I mean, again, with Sark's overall career resume, that's far from a guarantee, especially losing a lot of the names that we just.
I would say for a lot of the teams that we've talked about today. And we talk about this new SEC and how tough it's going to be. LSU, very favorable schedule. I would say Texas, you know, because we've talked about Texas versus Oklahoma. You know, who do we truly believe in more heading into the season? I think Texas talent-wise, yes. And also I think schedule-wise, yes. So, like, yeah, it's going to be harder. Yeah, it's going to be tougher week in and week out for Texas. But it's not as difficult of a gauntlet as it could have been for them coming into it. And same thing for LSU, obviously, in year three. So if there is some sort of saving grace of, like, we may not feel confident about this position or that position, you look at the schedule and you're like, you may be fine not being 100% and still be able to make the playoffs.
Christian with the $2 Super Chat says Bama D-line could go crazy. I'll have to do some more research into the Bama D-line. You lose a guy like Dallas Turner, who's probably the premier pass rusher in the entire NFL draft. That's always hard to replace. But again, you know, you had Will Anderson, you lost him, then it's Dallas Turner. So, like, you know, you feel like there's always somebody waiting in the wings to get after the quarterback for the Tide. If we wanted to throw another Big Ten team out there.
Oregon?
Yeah, I was going to say, in terms of things that I would watch on Oregon, one of the ones that probably starts at quarterback with Dylan Gabriel, though he's such a known quantity. How does he look in that system? But then for me, it kind of goes back to, are you going to see Oregon continue to evolve in the toughness portion of the game? Mm-hmm. That was the biggest thing that we champion about Dan Lanning, is bringing power in the trenches, bringing a bit of nastiness, a bit of attitude that the Pac-12 hadn't had for a while and that Oregon had never had. Like USC had it back in the Carroll championship days. They were dominant on both sides of the line. Can that be Oregon? And can Oregon actually, because it's kind of wild to think that Oregon can move from the Pac-12 to the Big Ten and we immediately expect them to be the second best team in the Big Ten. Partially, that is because some of the Big Ten is down, but like, it's still a completely different style of football. It's crazy travel that they're going to have to deal with. It's a Penn State team that should be really good and well-positioned with Drew Aller being an older, a year older. And then it's a Michigan team that, like, I don't know exactly what to make out of, but we can't wholly discount them.
Well, and I think, well, you talk about the questions with Sark at Texas, and I will agree, like, 1 year, the exception, like, yeah, I would love to see it year two, and I think he's going to do it. I think there's some momentum and confidence. I think there's a ton of confidence with Dan Lanning. We had him on the show. If you did not go see that, make sure you go watch it from about a month or two ago. I am very bullish on Dan Lanning. I think Dan Lanning has quickly worked his way up into one of the premier coaches in college football. He's built a very tough roster that obviously needs to continue to get tougher and tougher, just like everyone else does in America in today's game with the way it's played. But you have a veteran quarterback. Let's check that off the box. Do you have a guy that I can trust can go win football games? He had one of the most, I would say, one of the best performances of the season playing against Texas last year. Can do it with his arm, can do it with his legs. He is built perfectly for that system. So
yeah,
I don't think there's a lot of questions for Oregon, to be honest.
Okay,
I think it's a really good football team. I think if Dylan can just, you know, plug in, play, and go, which I anticipate he will, I think they're a contender, man.
I wonder who's going to be Oregon's weapons, though. Replacing Troy Franklin is no easy feat. What about Michigan? Where's your expectations at with the Wolverines? I mean, it's almost like, what am I looking for in spring? It's like a bit of everything. Yeah. I mean, you're talking about a complete overhaul in so many different ways. Like, I still think the O-line will be one of the best in the entire country, but can Sharon Moore, and everybody keeps telling me, oh, well, like, we saw Sharon Moore on game day multiple, but I don't have questions about Sharon Moore on game day, which is maybe where like the spring game doesn't really come into play that much. I have more questions is, can Sharon Moore be that CEO that Jim Harbaugh was and put together the culture and the team that Harbaugh did? Can they overcome losing so much talent? Can they overcome losing so many coaches and still fight for that Big Ten crown? Unfortunately for like this segment, I don't know if I'm going to be able to learn too much about any of those answers in a spring game in which they're going against themselves.
I think the hard part is they have overcome maybe the lack of superstars in the sense of like recruiting stars. You know, obviously, you know, superstars, I mean, they're going to have a bunch of guys drafted into the NFL drafts. Like they built those guys into NFL caliber players, but it's hard to judge a roster that does it in that fashion. It's easy to go to Ohio State and be like, man, they got a bunch of 4 and 5 star guys. I feel good about them. Or Alabama or Georgia or Texas. It's hard to judge a place like Michigan who does it a little bit untraditional where they're not getting top 10 classes.
Yeah, true.
They're just really good at developing. So you have to trust that development has continued with new coaching staff, not technically all new, but like a new head guy. And obviously losing that amount of talent to the NFL. So they'll still be a good team. I'm a sucker for stars. Like I know I can see, I can feel that these other teams are positioned to have success next year. Michigan, I need to learn a little bit more. And obviously week two against Texas, we will learn a little bit more.
My old man always used to say, cause you know, like when you play little league football and like, Your little league coach is like obsessed with the movie Rudy and stuff. My old man used to always say, look, you can have all the Rudies, you know, give me the fucking team of all stars and let's go toe to toe and let's see who wins. But to Michigan's point, like now, again, they were supremely talented. Look at all the guys they're going to be drafted, but a lot of those were developed. It wasn't like they were overwhelming in any of their recruiting rankings and getting to that point. That feels tough to sustain. Can they? Is it about to eclipse? Oh yeah, we're like an hour away from the eclipse. How about that? All right, let's do this. let's go to DraftKings real quick. And then on the other side, I want to talk a bit more about some of the early returns on Kalen DeBoer. The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here. And DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. So, you want to ride with the Cinderella throughout the tourney, or you want to keep it chalky with the one seeds, everything you need is right there at the tap of a button. And North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. So, what are you waiting for? Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app, use code TBOB, and new customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code TBOB, T-B-O-B. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. One no-sweat bet per new customer. Issued as one bonus bet based on amount of initial losing bet. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/promos for deposit, wagering, and eligibility restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Aaron, who's going to win the championship? UConn or Purdue? And why?
Purdue. Big white boy.
Wow.
Don't know his succinct name.
I like it. Zach Edey.
Yeah, there you go.
Can't make NIL money because he's Canadian.
It's crazy.
How about that, dude? All right. So, hey, The Athletic has an article out there on Kalen DeBoer, and a lot of it is dealing with, you know, now that we have media at these spring practices, what are the differences between Kalen DeBoer and Nick Saban? And one thing the article gets into is there's one quote where it's like having a normal person as head coach. And I think the temptation there is to say, oh my God, dude, they're definitely going to take a step back because this is not how they always did it. But look, I don't actually agree with that, right? I'm a firm believer in life that there is never just one pathway to success, right? Like even if you go back to the early 2000s and you look at like a Saban style versus like a Pete Carroll style, vastly different ways of coaching the game, yet the results strikingly similar. In that same way, I don't need Kalen DeBoer to be Nick Saban. And what I'm worried about is if Alabama does take a step back, what's going to be immediately bandied about is that it's because of the softness of Kalen DeBoer. He's just too soft. And I just think it would more be that, no, he's just not Nick Saban. And Nick Saban, regardless of style, is just better than anybody has ever been in college football history.
Yeah. No, he... Wasn't there somewhat of a complaint when Nick kind of got away from running the football? I mean, maybe the past couple of years, okay, let's get back to being a little bit more tougher. Let's get back to running the football more. Like, that was the goal, especially heading into last season. It was, you've built this offense initially with toughness, this football team with toughness. You got to more of like the elite quarterback, elite receivers. Now let's get back to playing big boy tough football. And they built this incredibly big offensive line that was just going to mow people over. You got the mobile quarterback. Like, we're just going to pound it, pound it, pound it. Like, this is truly Nick Saban's type of football team. And obviously that didn't work. You didn't win a championship. Yeah, you won the SEC. You got a game away. But Alabama standards are national championship or bust based on what they've done over the past, 15 years. So I don't know if necessarily it's going to be a question of style of play. It's too soft because Nick is one playing that side of football. I think it's just results based. That's it. Like, can you just win football games? I don't care if it's soft or not because Nick has done both of them.
Yeah. And look, Kalen DeBoer is going like to want to run the ball. Like, yeah. Kalen DeBoer, that was the best part about that Washington team is they weren't the best at running it, but they were the most committed. Yep. I mean, in all the big games, you go and look at the game logs, they ran it over 30 times in all those must-have-it games. And it wasn't like the stats quite often were. Now, they had some good games, but most were not.
But they had to, though, based on the structure of the defense. They had to run the football.
Yeah, but I'm saying I don't think DeBoer is going to come in and just want to throw it. Like, I guess what I'm saying is do not take DeBoer's more mild-mannered attitude as he doesn't like to play tough football. I think nothing could be further from the truth. This motherfucker came up in Sioux Falls. He came up playing Dakota football. Dude, you think that dude doesn't want to run the ball?
Unless you're running true air raid offense, and even like a lot of the air raid guys nowadays still implement like this new era of air raid where there is a running aspect to it. Because like, why beat your head into a wall if a team's going to drop eight or a team's going to play cover two? Like you're silly not to take advantage. Especially this is going to be, I know they won the Joe Moore Award last year, but this will be the most physical offensive line that he's probably ever coached.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. No, without a doubt. I mean,
like
Washington,
it's gonna be hard for him not to walk into that room.
Overachieving.
Yes. It's gonna be hard for him not to walk into that offensive line room and be like, damn, like I haven't coached guys that look like this before and not want to run the football.
In that same way, though, you know, if we're just doing Washington comparisons, can Jalen Milroe and those receivers be even a modicum of what Penix and that trio was last year? And how do you adjust? Because I agree they can't. So how do you adjust therein to still find success? The biggest question.
Play great defense.
True. Which, again, you're replacing your entire secondary. That's tough. Yeah. The biggest question that I have is whether or not the Saban holdovers will buy in. Because that can go either way, and that's when you can run into trouble. Do you have guys kind of whispering around the building, oh, this isn't how we used to do it, this isn't that or that, because that can almost become insidious. Like Dan Carlin always uses the term intellectual contagion, and that can kind of fester and grow, or maybe not, if everybody buys in to Kalen DeBoer's new way of coaching. Joe Campbell says Washington will have two first-round offensive linemen really drafted. Two. Yeah. Well,
I know they got one tackle.
Their left tackle was a beast. I don't know. Yeah.
I don't know the second one is. Who's the other guy that's going to be picked? I'm looking right now. I mean, the Troy kid, yes. I guess they got the Roger kid, two tackles.
Yeah. One of the tackles was pretty undersized, but like pretty fucking good. I can't remember which one it was. All right. That's it on, Ben Collinsworth. If Bama loses a game early, he isn't Saban will grow exponentially. I know that's what I'm kind of worried about for.
That'll be the headline of our thumbnail.
Is Kalen DeBoer a failure? Click on this YouTube video. And me and Aaron on the thumbnail will be like, I'm making like, you know, crazy YouTube faces.
With our beautiful mustaches.
Yeah. I mean, my stash is looking pretty stashy today, dude. Yeah. If I was just still like. Cut off all this. Finally, I do want to touch on John Calipari here because this is one of those news stories, Aaron, that when it broke, every Twitter account, I immediately went and checked. It'd be like, is this a parody account? Mm-hmm. Like, I need to make sure that I'm not getting got here because I don't think, like, look, Kentucky would have been fine firing John Calipari. I don't think Kentucky feels too good about John Calipari breaking up with them, especially not for Arkansas. I mean, you are talking about one of the four most premier programs in all of college basketball. And essentially, John Calipari just hit the transfer portal, put his name in the portal. Obviously, there's unrest. With him in Kentucky, and here came Arkansas with this incredible NIL deal headed by the owner of Tyson Chicken. And next thing you know, and for Arkansas fans, how rare is it that you have a guy like Musselman leave you and then you upgrade? When you lose a great coach that leaves you willingly, you very rarely, if ever, then immediately upgrade. And you say, well, Musselman's been better than Cal lately. Is he really an upgrade? Here's the deal with Cal and Kentucky. I think that familiarity can breed contempt. And I think with a guy that's like Cal going now to Arkansas, he's going to be so rejuvenated that I think this is going to kind of be Cal's final act. At least in the short term, I think he's going to pay very good dividends. I just never thought that you would ever have a situation where the Kentucky Wildcats are getting poached by the Arkansas Razorbacks.
Arkansas's got a decent tradition in basketball.
No, they're okay. I mean, yeah. It's not close, though.
I know it's not Kentucky. I know. I mean, Kentucky's a blue blood.
Is
he going to get in the suit? Effect. I think a lot of people in the chat want to know, like, you think he's just going to put a polo on? You know, kind of take it down a notch, just be a little bit more chill?
I'm more interested to see if he's still going to go the full one-and-done route where maybe a bit harder at Arkansas because they don't have quite the brand, or if he changes and goes more veteran portal development heavy. I'm also interested to see the domino effect. Does Nate Oates now go to Kentucky? Ooh. Does Will Wade now end up at Alabama? Like, there's a lot of interesting ancillary effects to this move that could be pretty, pretty, because it seems like Nate Oates to Kentucky is the immediate name that everybody is getting into. Although I would not want to see Will Wade to Alabama as an LSU fan. That would be supremely disappointing. John Glasgow says Calipari's a used car salesman. Yeah, but he's one who makes a shit ton of money. You know, he's the best used car salesman.
You have to be. We thought you act like that's a negative thing for a football or any sort of collegiate coach.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, why is that a bad thing?
It's not. It's not a bad thing. All right. I mean, that's all really got. Oh, Super League wish list. One thing you'd want a college football Super League:
relegation,
true relegation and promotion. Mm-hmm. You know. I cannot fathom, knowing what these schools mean to their local economies, I still can't fathom a world into which they ever agree to that. But if you're asking me what I want, that's what I would want. Obviously.
What's the final vote count for should I grow out the power stash for this weekend? 72% say yes.
Yeah, you have to at this point, bro. I mean, all it looks right, good. Well, it doesn't look trashy.
No, I agree. I just don't know, like, if I give another 5 days, we'll be a little bit too trashy by the spring game this weekend.
Bo Kenny says, who you guys got for the Masters?
Tiger.
Oh, really? Okay. Hell yeah.
Brooks.
You just answer that every year?
Yeah.
Just Tiger every year?
Just make the cut, Tiger. Just make the damn cut.
Doesn't he set some sort of record if he makes the cut?
Yeah.
You know, guys, I'm trying to think about like a funny T-Bob Ramble rant to end this show, and I just don't know that I have one today, actually. I had a relatively low-key weekend. I don't think I got into anything degenerate. I actually didn't go to this music festival that I absolutely love that my wife banned me from 2 years ago. I wasn't allowed to go back. Just hung out with the kids all weekend. I don't know. I guess that's going to be it.
All right. See you tomorrow.
Oh, wait. Wait, we had one super chat we didn't get into. I just remembered.
Did we?
Goat Dog, $5 super chat. Talking about the eclipse. Stare at it with shades or sacrifice a virgin during the eclipse? Where do you stand? To be clear, I am very about human sacrifice. Okay. We did it for thousands of years. Only recently have we gotten away from human sacrifice. I'm a firm believer that if you want to, I think we talked about it on the show, but if you wanted to increase in stadium entertainment, what if you had like the baby race where at the end, the last place baby was sacrificed in front of the crowd? You're going to tell me that wouldn't amp people up? The only thing I would change is I'm sick of virgin sacrifices. Okay. I want to sacrifice man whores. I want to sacrifice Aaron Murray up there because you're dirty. You're out here fucking everybody's daughters. You're just upsetting dads everywhere. I'm
making dads happy. Are you fucking kidding me?
How are you making dads happy?
Because their daughter fucked me. No.
Oh my God. That is, oh my God, that is the most QB1 answer that I've ever heard in my entire life. No, that dad's happy because his daughter fucked the SEC's all-time passing yardage leader. Like, you know, not many can say that, or quite a few can, but still relatively maybe not many. There it is. We found our way there, guys. Hey, massive thank you to everybody hanging out with us. Again, massive thank you to PG, Pat Gunther, Chris Tran, Danny Cardenas, everybody at The Volume for having us. And thank you to everybody with us through this transition. And we'll be back with some more Snaps Live tomorrow.
The Volume.